SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Too early for flapjacks? I don't think so. A very good Groundhog Day, everybody. A At the Races tradition since probably, I'll let Casey answer that, I think. I probably about the time Casey joined the show. So 12 years or so. Last year, I think, it was a Sunday. Was it a Sunday? We couldn't do Groundhog Day, the great Groundhog Day tradition around here. you will hear a couple of Groundhog Day clips. You know, it's my favorite, and when it comes to the movie, Tina hates it, and we argue constantly. And so this morning, before she got up, while she was waiting to see if there was going to be school, the answer is there isn't. We didn't get much snow either. It's not like what went on further down the seaboard. But I went out early, and I did the snow throwing and the walk and the stoops and that kind of thing. So this way, she may be compelled to let me watch Groundhog Day later. I wouldn't guarantee it, but yeah, I cannot convince her of how great it is. So I may be watching alone, or maybe I can coerce her. I think it's got it all, right? It's got a message. It's existential. It's romantic. It's brilliant. There's no two ways about it. And just be fair. It's just a funny. It's a funny event. it's the goofiest of all markers on the calendar, Groundhog Day. And of course, as I think everybody anticipated, Phil did see the shadow, and six more weeks of winter, and nobody is going to want to see what they just saw the last, 24 plus hours. Basically, you got the same storm downstate and into, through Jersey and Pennsylvania and the like that we had in December, 3 feet of snow. I mean, it's kind of funny. It used to be you'd get, a few inches of snow here and then a few inches of snow later, several times, throughout the winter. Now it's like there's one or two big storms and a little odd, but everybody digging out and making the best of it. I saw what they say in Central Park, drifts of 5 feet. When the wind's kicking that light powder around, it's tough. I'm sure some people broke out their cross-country skis and the like. And of course, predictably cancellations of racing and training, etc. Everywhere that racing and training is going on right now in the East. So a couple of days of it, and things will straighten out as the week goes on. So I don't think we got more than 4, 5, maybe 6 inches at the most. So we're all cleaned up around here. And the day won't won't really be affected. That was it. Yeah, we were getting just the northern dusting of the thing. But I guess everywhere south of here, it was rough. So hope everybody's safe and warm. And we'll talk to Andy. We'll see how Andy made out. I know he was concerned yesterday. I talked to Andy at one point yesterday, and he said, you know, my deli closed. The deli where he goes for lunch. And I started to laugh, and he said, "You're laughing." I said, "Andy, you're on the west side. I mean, there's another deli. I mean, there's got to be another place to get food. I mean, you know, this is a nice station zebra. It's you're not gonna, you know, you don't have to send out for huskies. Call in the wild, mush you huskies." Well, we will do some Groundhog Day stuff the first half of the show. Second half, though, we have to actually get fairly solemn and serious. We're going to do some tributing to John Forbes. And as I said yesterday with Mig, and it was kind of cool, actually, that Mig had ridden that Larica for John. As I tweeted on Sunday night, there was going to be an outpouring of respect and appreciation for John Forbes. And it, you know, transcends, you know, just his work as a horseman, because he, as you'll hear, we got about half a dozen. I literally could have done easily. We could do 3 hours easily. But John Parada is going to come into the studio. And as I mentioned yesterday, John was very close to Forbes, and a portion of John's career was spent, working with him as a stable agent. And John will talk about that. Joe Rosen, Dennis Drazen, Pat McBurney will visit. And, of course, Pat was an assistant, and they passed a number of stake horses back and forth, as Pat was going out on his own. And Alan Foreman will be with us because, of course, John's career started to take on the responsibilities of, horseman representation. And as, frankly, as Alan would attest to, Rick Violette, very similar, a top horseman who devoted, the back end of his career to representing the horsemen. And it's a responsibility I won't even call it a labor of love. It's more in a lot of ways, an obligation to whoever has to soldier and shoulder the responsibilities. Because it's not fun. It's hard work, generally, without compensation, no reward. But John had a incredible love of Monmouth and a pride that, has really been a part of, one of the sport's most unique venues. And, John kind of bridged the gap to, the current era and it's horseman owned. So Dennis Drazen will discuss that part. And I'm sure Alan Foreman, Alan will talk about broad terms, the friendship that they had and how appreciative Alan was and is of what John Forbes represented for racing in New Jersey, and how invaluable his representation was. So we'll also hear from Julie Krohn, and Julie, as you'll hear, I'm sure that John will talk about it, because John was very close to becoming. There was a real possibility that John might have been Julie Krohn's agent, right, as her career was taking off too. And instead, John took on the responsibilities that with Due Process and just ran, became the executive to run Due Process Stable. But Julie, so tightly associated with, certainly with Tale of the Cat, we'll probably reach for the King's Bishop. Tale of the Cat, the biggest. I don't think that John won a grade one. Obviously, the King's Bishop became a grade one, but when Tale of the Cat won it, I don't believe it was a grade one at that point. 90, 98, 90, something like that. So, John Forbes tribute, hour three, and maybe a little bit at the tail end of hour two. We're going to talk to Shug in just a couple of minutes, as promised. Looking forward to talking about Greatest Honor and the development curve that Shug is anticipating for the Holy Bull winner. Obviously, taking nice incremental steps forward. So always a treat to talk to Shug. And it's funny, yesterday had the same situation in terms of covering a few different performers and winners in conversation with Dallas. And Baffert, there's always a litany that you can catch up with. But for Shug, don't forget, last week, Pegasus Day, there was performers win to talk about too, and see what's next. How he's planning to attack the first half of the year with performer. So, Claude Ray McGahee III in just a couple of minutes, and Brian Lynch. Always get a chance to catch up with Brian. Absolutely, got to take it. We'll talk about Spooky Channel's win, and I didn't notice the sibling to Coffee Click. I got to pull that one up. I mean, you remember last year, and I got to go find it. I know it's at Derby Trail, because I made a point of writing up all those horses that Brian had told us about. I made the whole litany, and that Coffee Click sibling was one. So we'll talk to Brian Lynch as well. And I'm trying to move Andy up to like 10:15 to 10:45 in that vicinity. So if that works for Andy, it feels like there's a chance that if he gets up late, that we may push him into tomorrow. Couple of pieces of news before we take a break and reach for Shug. Yesterday, of course, we had heralded the rally in support of the HHR legislation in Kentucky, and State Senator John Schickel from Union County. He will introduce it today, and yesterday you had a parade of speakers, and it seemed like obviously an enthusiastic. I mean, everybody that was involved from the from the side of the legislature. You know, obviously they're trying to get this done, and they expect that the Senate is not going to be an issue. The state Senate, you know, will is anticipated that they've got everything, you know, in terms of votes that they that they're going to need. Their concern apparently is in the House, and that it, as Adam Koenig said last week, in terms of whipping votes, and Adam, you know, was very eloquent talking about the, you know, the concern for the jobs, and you know, the on the other side of this is the purported problem gambling. That's the alleged concern, and oh, it's ruining families. Adam brings up the salient point: having no jobs will ruin families a lot more readily. it's quite something that point needs to be made. But you know, Adam driving that home yesterday. So the mechanics are there with a very narrow. They're not trying to get sports wagering involved here. They're not trying to do anything with expanded, you know, table games and cassette. There's none of that. You know, there's apparently, you know, members of, you know, the legislators that are concerned that this is somehow a gateway bill, that they're trying to, it's an incursion of gambling. I mean, this has been going on now for close to a decade, and there's real economic engine associated with all of these facilities that are supporting the year-round racing in the Commonwealth. It should be a no-brainer, but there's a lot of things these days that should be a no-brainer. And yet, you know, here they are having to hammer this through. So, again, go to Horses Work. And if you have not contacted and sent in those form letters, please do so. If you've got relatives in Kentucky, check with them to see if they've done this. And I just can't urge enough the need to give support and arm everybody in Frankfort with the support that they can use to get this done. So we'll hear more later in the week. Before we get to Shug, I should mention that it was a terrific piece that Bob Ehalt put together. It's at Blood Horse that talks about Aqueduct and Belmont and the role that both are playing as vaccination centers. Yeah, a really nice piece. And Bob talked to health officials and state government officials and Martin Panza and everybody that on the backstretch, and it's really a nice piece because it sort of reminds, titles NYRA's value to residents seen in vaccination centers. It reminds that the racetrack is a community organ. With tremendous an infrastructure that lends itself to this kind of activity in in need. And of course, you know, there was the potential in the teeth of, you know, the pandemic right at the beginning that that Aqueduct, you know, had potential to become a field hospital. It turned out not to be needed in that regard, but being utilized right now as a vaccination center. And actually, the piece reminds, going back to the hurricane and Belmont was a Red Cross, I'd forgotten about that, had been a Red Cross feeding station, you know, when people were without power for days. So, again, really nice. If you haven't seen it, Bob B. Halt's piece at Blood Horse, NYRA's Value to Residents Seen in Vaccination Centers. And, you know, well, Case, if you want to, I guess we could maybe listen in to one of our favorite Groundhog Day moments as we reach for Shug to talk about greatest honor. Back after this with Shug.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
They've been up all night, Phil. Isn't it great? so good. There's just one spectacular moment after another. This big blizzard thing that I sure hope we're going to hear from Ned Ryerson. So much fun. Well, it was fun watching on Saturday as greatest honor establishes himself for Don Adam and Shug toward Florida Derby. And as we mentioned, and as Jay Pribman laid out on Friday, this feels like kind of an orb-esque scenario. And greatest honor is going to have to keep improving. But boy, the way he did this and, you know, the move that he made without, you know, really being exhorted much by Jose Ortiz, excited to, you know, to hear about the way Shug has brought him along. And Casey just said Shug's walking over to his office. He's obviously at Payson Park. And as soon as he settles in, you know, and as we've discussed with Shug a lot when it comes to his, you know, to his route types and his you know, hopeful stake horses. He started Greatest Honor at 7/8 at Saratoga at the end of the meet. And he ran, you know, very solidly in that race behind Olympiad and Caddo River. And of course, Caddo River, you know, they actually faced off a second time. That was the race that Speaker's Corner won at Belmont. I mean, he has done very little wrong on his way to this, you know, this record. He's in the money, 5 out of 5, 2 wins now, and a second and 2/3. So it's also a record that, when it comes to the figs, keeps increasing. 72 buyer, 77 buyer, 79 buyer, 83 buyer, and then an 89 on Saturday. So This is a horse that's certainly going in the right direction, and we congratulate Shug McGahee, who joins us now. Shug, congratulations to you and the Adams.
Thank you, Steve. That was a good day.
Gotta ask right away. I mean, the way in which he moved to the lead, and it didn't seem like Jose Ortiz was really asking all that much of him.
No, I think he's the kind of horse. I don't think he's quick. I think he's got such a long stride that he looks quick. You know, and he picks his horses up so quick that from a sort of a middle of the pack position, that it's pretty impressive. And then when the other day when he made the lead and stretched, Jose said he was really basically on half speed from the 3/16 pole home, that there was a lot more in the tank, and he was just sort of playing around, which that doesn't surprise me.
We'll talk about this race in a little bit more and getting to this race. I want to go back to the summer and get a little bit of the backstory here. And, of course, with being a Tappet and, being out of Tiffany's Honor, a daughter of Better Than Honor, there's a pedigree here that, screams classic distance. Talk about, your early impressions of the colt and, how you got him going.
Well, I saw him first, like the 1st of March at the farm. Mr. Adam, with his pedigree and stuff, had high hopes for him and really liked him. And, I liked him when I saw him quite a bit myself. I think one of the things that's sort of impresses me about him now is that with his pedigree and his makeup is how quick he came around. He's a Tappet, so he wasn't in his early stages. He wasn't that easy. As they seem to have a mind of their own sometime, but he would tolerate about everything I wanted him to do. And, we got him ready to run, and I knew he probably wouldn't win, but, I just wanted to see him break halfway decent, and then he wasn't going to be fast in the finish up, and that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what it did in the second start. And looking back on it, in hindsight, it wasn't planned. That I think those 2/7/8 races really set him up good for his longer races, where he learned and he wasn't intimidated by, the dirt situation or being around other horses or running by other horses. And I think that really helped him when we got him going around two turns. And we ran him over to Aqueduct. It was the day after the Breeders' Cup, so I was on my way back to New York. And, all the jocks were in quarantine. So Trevor McCarty rode him. And he told me after he rode him, he said, I'm not sure he shouldn't have won. He said, I made a mistake or two on him. I said, don't worry about that. This is all, this is just a process. And, then we got him down here, and Luis rode him, and I thought he rode a great race on him and winning. And, then we went back to Jose, and, I thought he rode a perfect race on him the other day. You got to keep him, I thought he had him in great position to give him a chance to win if he had the horse enough. And then when he asked him, he was there in a hurry, and and he was very impressive through the lane and finishing. And I heard you talking about his numbers, and that's one of the things that I've been really pleased with too, is as I've told friends of mine, if he had to run 103 Saturday, I'd be worried. But his steady climb up, I think shows improvement in every start, and without overdoing it.
Exactly. It obviously, when you went off by half a dozen, and that's a nice way to keep something in the tank for later. What do you foresee in terms of him, polishing him up? Jay Pribman on Friday, Shug, talked about how this really is the orb template, and you know, even down to breaking his maiden in the fourth start, you know, that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you envision, you know, buffing him up.
Well, it is kind of ironic that they would both been on those same patterns, you know, and well, you know, I mean, we've got the Fountain of Youth here. Whether I run him there or not, I don't know. I mean, he came out of the race great. You know, I put the tack back on him today. He's pacing and just took him for a long walk. But you also got the Florida Derby on the 27th, which, you know, if you did run Holy Bull, Fountain of Youth, and Florida Derby, you know, you might be bunching it up a little bit. And so I'm just going to let him sort of tell me what I think he needs to do, and you know, then I'll make up my mind whether I'm going to run him in the Fountain of Youth and just wait till the mile and eighth, which, as you alluded to a minute ago, that you know he's begging to run far, and he's got the pedigree to run far, and he's got the running style to run far. So always that was what I was a little bit worried about in the whole Holy Bull was the mile and 16th, and but. You know, so the mile and eighth, I think, would suit him a lot better. But I'm gonna evaluate that, you know, sort of as we go along.
Well, it has to also be, I would think, really encouraging to see him come from off the pace like that at a racetrack where that isn't always the easiest, right?
You know, we had the seven post two going a mile and 16th, a sort of a short run, and Jose did a good job of saving ground on him, and you know, that was what I said a minute ago, that, you know, I was a little bit worried about the mile and 16th, and I mean, you know, Todd's horses are going to be quick, and you know, the one horse in Prime Factor, they, you know, he ran good the first time he ran. It's difficult to go from short to long and graded races, but, you know, I mean, I definitely had to keep my eye on him. You know, he was a pretty prohibitive favorite. So, you know, I agree with you that that was always my concern with Orb. You know, I said, is he going to be able to catch up over this track? I mean, really, when he broke his maiden, which was, I think, Thanksgiving weekend at Aqueduct, I remember walking back through the park, and that was going two turns. They're going a mile and eighth, I think. You know, I was thinking to myself, I said, you know, take him to Florida, run him a couple of times over that track, just let him get the experience, and then, you know, maybe he'll be, when we get him back to New York, maybe he'll be a wood horse. So I don't know that I thought that quite far ahead with greatest honor, but after, you know, the other day, you know, especially I am going to be looking forward to getting him stretched out.
Give me a little background on training for the Adams as well. It's got to be very exciting for them that they've had plenty of success over the years. Haven't won a grade one since Filmmaker, I don't believe, but to have a classic horse, I'm sure they're excited.
I think it was. He was here with his wife and his daughter and son-in-law and his granddaughter and her husband. So they were all pretty excited. And, you know, I mean, Mr. Adam put a lot into it. And this kind of just came about that he had a bunch of two-year-olds and he wanted to just sort of split them up. And so I went up to the farm and looked at a few of them. It was supposed to start out with five or six and end up being more than that. And then it got into some of the older horses. And so, you know, luckily we had 10 for 10, who was second to Nashville and second to Remsen, who stopped right now. But I think that, you know, I think about another 30 days I'll put him back in training. And, you know, I think you'll see a pretty nice horse over the summer. And, you know, there's a couple of nice fillies up at Payson Park, Quality Road filly, and another filly by American Pharoah that I like quite a bit. And then, I had American Pharoah filly called Baby Blythe, made one start at Aqueduct at the end. But I think I was, it was sometime in December, first on the grass. And Rosario rode her, kind of a typical Rosario ride. He let her feel herself along ways, and she finished good. I had to stop her, but she's about 30 days from going back and training, too. But I think she's got a big, big potential, on the turf. So I think there's some stuff in the pipeline that's okay. And, my experience, I hadn't had, May the 1st of last year, but, we've had a good relationship, and I got a very good relationship with this kind of the guy that runs the show and runs his farm named Ernie Redamoso, who I've known the Redamoso family from around Louisville for a long time. And really kind of unbeknownst to me, he worked for me in the early fifth stage when Jimmy Baker was there. He was sort of rubbing horses under Jimmy Baker, but I didn't really remember that until we went up to the farm and he told him. So, Ernie and I have got a good relationship, and, he runs the show, and Mr. Adam, pretty much runs everything through him, and they're both been very, very easy to work for, and, hopefully we can have some success, and it'll stay where they're very easy to work for. Things go wrong sometimes. Things change, but I don't think they will in that. They're very patient, understanding people, and so far it's been fun.
Well, winning like this, this will go a long way. And you mentioned the other ones. I was going to ask you about 10 for 10, so it's good to hear that there's something to look forward to for the second half there. And the story, and I'll probably do this with Sid Fernando tomorrow, it's kind of interesting the way in which they turned the dam. They bought the dam for a lot of money, and then I think got maybe two foals with her, and this is one of them, and then sold her for a lot of money to Mr. Yoshida, to Katsumi Yoshida, for $2.2
million. Well, he was telling me the other day that he really liked that pet, the Better Than Honor. That was something sort of had always jumped at him, that pedigree, which we all know is a tremendous pedigree. And I think she was in foal to Tappet when he bought her privately. I think she went through the sale and maybe didn't sell, and he called Boyd Browning, and they made a deal where he could buy her, and then she has a Tappet colt, and that's what he wanted out of her, and the Tappet colt died, and he bred her to Warfront, and he sold that yearling, I think, for quite a bit of money, and it didn't pan out, but he bred her back to Tappet and got Greatest Honor, and then resold the mare. And I think that probably the reasoning behind a little bit of selling the mare is, he kind of got into the deal where at his age, do I need brood mares and be waiting on these things so I can go to sale? He said, I want to race. And can go to the sale and buy yearlings. And, that's sort of what he's done the last couple of years. And so I think that's probably why she went back through the sale, and like you say, he sold a yearling out of her for a good amount of money, and he sold her back for probably about what he paid for. I'm not sure what he paid for, but
$2 million
around that number.
About $2 million, and,
and now he's got this horse, so I think that's probably even before I knew Mr. Adam or knew him to speak to. I just had heard from Mike Klein and Lane's Inn or somebody that, that he was wanting to sell, kind of get out of the breeding part of it to, to just buy yearlings and just race and enjoy the racing. And, I think that's what he's done. He's got this bunch of three-year-olds we just talked about, and I think he's got 8 coming two-year-olds, with 7 of them he bought in September. At basic and Keeneland, And, you know, I think that's what his game plan is going to be in the future is, you know, trying to buy, you know, well-bred yearling colts and fillies. So he's got them split up a little bit and just enjoy the race.
Not a bad plan, to say the least. And you know, to have a horse like this, you know, really arrive on time, and you know, with your knowledge and experience, pushing forward. And as we were waiting for you to get to the office, I just noted, Shug, that you know, he's hit the board every time, and he has faced a lot of good horses. That part of it, as he was getting the education and you know, as you were moving him along, you know, he ran into Caddo River both times. I know that Speaker's Corner hasn't come back, but you know, horses that were behind him have come back to win. So he's kept terrific company, and there's just a lot, you know, there's a lot to recommend him at this point, you know, as we hit February.
Well, I'm excited about him. I was excited about his race the other day. I agree with you about his company, but any more in New York, when you're in a maiden race, Saratoga, or the fall of the year in Belmont Park, or even at Aqueduct anymore, you're gonna face good company. The horses that come out of those maiden races usually are gonna be heard from down the line. I mean, it's gotten where it's, you know, it's tough down here too. But so. You know, I think when they can win in New York, that it shows they've got some ability.
Yeah, we're excited for everybody involved here. Greatest honor, and it's got a lot going for him as we look toward Fountain, perhaps Florida Derby, however it plays out. And Shug, in addition, of course, to the emerging 3-year-old, there's also the still emerging 5-year-old. Let's talk a little bit about last weekend and performers win. And I know some people were trying to make out like, oh, you know, he had to work hard to beat Eye of a Jedi. The fact of the matter is that horse absolutely was running the same kinds of figures that performers been running. And it wasn't a surprise that, you know, that he put him to the test.
No, it wasn't at all. I mean, I thought he was the horse to beat. And, you know, I looked at his form by the Jedi's more than once, you know, and I was saying, yeah, you know, this horse is a little bit better horse than people are giving him credit for. And,
yep.
You know, as Joel said, he said, you know, I'm sitting back there and piddling along, and I look up and those two horses are going along on the lead pretty easy. He said, I better get going here. And, you know, I thought he rode a good race by kind of saving ground and getting to the outside and being able to win. And, you know, that's only the performer's third start in, you know, in over a year.
Yep.
And, you know, when he ran when he won the Discovery, which was, you know, say the 18th or 20th of November or something of last year, he never ran again until October, and then we had almost 2 months before the Cigar, and we drew the inside on sloppy track and on December the 5th, and, you know, training in New York, you know, starting in November and stuff sometimes can be a bit tricky, so I did think I had him on a lot better pattern here going into the Hooper than I did on the for the Cigar Mile, and you know, I was pleased with the race. I thought he ran a 99 buyer, and you know, I thought he ran good. I thought he, I think he beat a pretty darn nice horse.
Well, it's also, you know, a good you know, way to move forward into the year, and you know, now as a 5-year-old, and you know, I know we've talked about him, you know, quite a bit over the last 2 years. There's got to be, you know, some big targets. You're running the Cigar Mile with, you know, the intent of getting him, you know, ideally the grade one win. But talk about, you know, how you approach his season and, you know, picking spots. I mean, you do have, when's the Gulfstream Park handicap, the grade one?
I don't know if they have one.
No, isn't the, or is that a grade two? The, It's a grade two, I guess. The mile is that on?
Well, I'm thinking about stretching him out. The mile race is a little bit. I got a feeling. Let me see when that thing is. But I sort of had in my mind trying to get him stretched out a little bit. So I'm sort of looking at maybe the Howell's Holt down here, which is a grade three going around two turns, World Excelsior at Aqueduct, which is a listed it's a grade three also going around right. two turns. But that was sort of what my mind's been. And, you know, I think now I'm 5 years old, maybe doesn't want to be as rushed too much. And so that was what I sort of had in mind for him. Is one of those two races. I was going to talk to Daisy Phipps this morning after we got off the phone and sort of run some of those ideas by her, and then we can sort of see what what we come up with. But that was sort of what I had in my mind, and you know, I'd sort of like to have him too, where maybe the Excelsior's with Memorial Day, maybe Joel will be there for that. It gets to be a busy time then, but. I'd sure like to have him be able to keep riding because he seems to know him so well. And so we'll just kind of use that as a little bit of a barometer, too. The Gulfstream Park mile is the 27th. It's grade two going a mile. And that could be a possibility, but we'll just see how it all shakes out.
Shug, I mean, do you sense coming out of that race, you've had the week and he's obviously been back to the track. Does he have the next level in him? Is there something, is it there to extract?
I think so, Steve. I think his races have been good races. This year, just with COVID and stuff, I was going to get him started the 1st of April and had him ready. I had him getting ready to get on a van 2 weeks before the Carter, and Panza called me early in the afternoon and said, give me a couple hours before you send him. And I had 10 or 11 I was going to send up there. And he called me back and said, we've called off racing. So when was that? March 20th or something. And
give or take, yeah.
And so then I had him ready for the Carter again, and, he's ready to go. I was getting ready to take him over and school him in the paddock, I think, on Thursday. He's in, and, he had an ankle jump up on him. I had to back off of him again. I didn't get him back to the races until October, and that was a pretty easy win for him that day. And then, I thought about the Fall City, but I thought that's going a mile and eighth off one race in a year is not going to be that easy a pass, and going to a different racetrack and this and that. So I elected to go to the Cigar Mile, and that was another 2 months before he could run again. And I think that, if everything goes right with racing and the pandemic and stuff, that we can have him on a lot better pattern than we had him on last year. And maybe we can utilize some of the better races, such as maybe the Suburban at Belmont or the Whitney at Saratoga. I mean, I think he could possibly be that kind of horse.
Performer, now five, the Spitestown Phipps homebred, and out of protesting, breaking the rules is
half brother.
Sister, yeah, half exactly. And
but I'm cheering for Hot Chocolate right now. Horse of Siakas that won the other day, wasn't it? Hot Chocolate.
It's me. That's my horse, Kid Chocolate.
I know it is. That's what I was saying.
Thank you, Shug. Well, the horse. If we're going to talk about one of ours, I think you next time you get a chance to go over to Palm Meadows, go take a look at Claude Ray, and Susan's bringing him along. We have to take a chip out of an ankle, and but he's inching forward.
We're good.
That would be. Do you go over there ever? Do you ever to Palm Meadows?
No. I've been in Palm Meadows one time, and that was before a horse ever was there.
when they were building it.
Well, they were going to put horses in that day. It was when Storm Flag Flying was a 2-year-old, and I brought her from back from Chicago, and then we brought her to Payson Park, and I went down there to meet her there, and then we were driving to our home down here, and I said, let's pull in Palm Beach down and just see what it looked like, and there was going to be horses there like in 2 weeks, and they were landscaping, and it looked pretty good. Yeah. Remember, I had friends going there that, said, I don't know what we're going to get into. I remember calling them on the way after we left there. I said, you ain't going to worry about anything here. And I said, it's a pretty nice place. And then I didn't really know what was going on. And so I said to Alice, I said, Doug Don's, he was still working here. And I said, his truck's in the parking lot. Let's go in there and see what they got in mind with that. It was set up. When you drove in there, you thought, this guy, he's going to try to race here. And I remember Doug telling me, he said, they might try to, but it ain't going to be in our lifetime. So.
There had been that, that discussion, absolutely, about racing up there. You're 100% right. And then things morphed. Well, if there's a way for us I would love to get a picture of you with the horse, with your namesake, with Claude Ray. He's as big as a house, Shug. It'd be nice if he stopped growing some point here.
There was a horse in my social inclusion, you remember, it was a Gulfstream Dymo, Holy Bull the other day, he might have been the biggest thoroughbred I ever saw. He was huge. I mean, that horse, his father was big and could really run. But this horse, man, he was some kind of big everywhere.
That's the one they called Giraffales.
Yeah.
Actually, that horse finished fifth on paper had won that race at Calder and, 49 buyer, and actually, he ran all right. He kind of came late and picked a couple of pieces and got the last check.
Yeah,
Giraffales. Yeah, that's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that. Let me ask you about a couple things as well, because you got some maidens that are getting close, I think, Shug. And before we talk about those, your Pegasus recap for both the turf and the dirt, because I thought Breaking the Rules and North Dakota, I thought they both had a chance to make some noise in there. And then, of course, your thoughts on Code of Honor on the dirt race.
Well, I think with Breaking the Rules, he was just in trouble the whole way down on the inside. Just what Johnny said, he was kind of mad at himself. He said, I had an opportunity down in there when I could have gone, and the winner went and I didn't, and I got stopped the whole way. And then, I think with this turf course down here, it just didn't work in North Dakota's favor, but he came out of it good. And I think we'll have some fun with him in the longer races, around the country. And that's what we're kind of planning on, maybe taking the Keeneland, running that race there, and Breaking the Rules. I just sent up to Ocala the other day to give him a couple of months off so we could have a fresh horse for the summer, and so that's what he's up to. And Code of Honor is the same thing. I was very disappointed in his race. I thought he was really doing good, and, I thought this was, a good opportunity for him. Whether he can beat the winner or not on his best race, I don't know. But I was disappointed in that. I thought Tyler rode a great race on him. He saved ground around both turns. He just gave him a little run and was sort of finished at the 16th pole. And so I've done the same thing with him. He's up at Nile Brennan's and turned out. And I'm going to give him at least 60 days, and we'll have him back by the middle of the summer and racing summer and fall and see where it goes from there.
Fair enough. It mentioned besides the other stake performers, you've got a couple of maidens that came close just the last week, and Temperament Twist and No Ordinary Time both inching forward.
Well, Temperament Twist, I was disappointed the first time she ran an aqueduct in a race. You know, she'd been a little bit of a problem at the gate, but she had been she'd been a lot better, and she didn't break that good. But I thought she would finish really well, and she didn't. And so we just brought her down here and kind of backed off of her a little bit. And then, you know, I thought her race was good the other day. You know, she ran into a really fast filly of Kelly Breen's, and, you know, Jose came back and he said, we could have been second, but he said, I was trying to win the race, which you could see when she was running. And she's come out of it fine. I just sort of walked on her tack the last week or 10 days, just sort of letting, you know, I don't need to be in a hurry, you know, down here with them. And no ordinary time, you know, she's been a little bit of a problem with being a little bit of a too aggressive in her first two races. And we got her down to pacing and worked on her. I thought Le Perou would really, really fit her well, which he did. And, you know, she ran a good race. She was just second. She thought that he said turn for home, and I thought I'd get the winner. But the two things I really liked about her was she relaxed really well for him. And then when those horses all got around her and stuff, I thought she had every chance to pack it in. And, you know, and she did, and she outfought them. And, you know, I think nice. She's got a nice future in front of her.
Very nice. Well,
but I'm not going to be in a hurry to run her back either. You know, I'm just sort of biding my time, get a race into them, sort of see where we are. If they're going to be, you know, a New York horse or Kentucky horse or wherever. And so now just the ordinary time was the same thing. I just walked under tack for a while. And, you know, we got those turnout paddocks up there, and I turn out nodes and, you know, just sort of trying to give them a chance.
Now, no ordinary time and temperament twist from last weekend. I do see that Mrs. Danvers is starting to tighten up a little bit. What's on the agenda for the Comley winner?
Royal Delta, if everything goes right. She's been on a good work pattern. You know, I'll work her again on Saturday, and then I'll have another good solid work into her. And my plans are to run her in the Royal Delta here on February the 20th.
Nice.
And going from there, I had a little bit of thought early in the winter, maybe taking her to Oklahoma, running the Bicor, but Monogamy Girl's going that way, and there's no sense in me shipping all the way that far to run against her. I mean, if she was going to be here, that'd be a different story, but, you know, they have to put her on a plane and ship all the way over there, and, you know, with the COVID situation, you know, who are you going to get to ride them? And, so she's going to run here in Royal Delta on the 20th.
How about that Woodbine Oaks hopeful Cafe Society for Joe Allen?
I just stopped her and turned her out. She had some bone bruising and out of her last race, and so I'll give her about 60 days, which she's had, you know, probably 3 weeks, and, you know, then bring her back. And, you know, I don't know about the Woodbound Oaks, but I think she's got a good future. I was going to run her in the Gasparilla over at Tampa, and I was up there one day, and I wasn't pleased with the way she's going, and so I just stopped on her.
How about Dreams of Tomorrow?
Well, there just hadn't been a spot for him. He's doing really good. He's a Gulfstream, and he's doing really, really well. The only A other than going distance of ground was a mile and a half. And I don't want to do that to him and this early in the year. So hopefully maybe in the next book, you know, there'll be something going a mile and eight, mile and 3/16, and I'll have him ready for that.
Excellent. Excellent. Trying to think. Who are we missing? Scarlet Sky.
Scarlet Sky's going to run back here in Palm Beach on February the 27th. He came out of his race really well. I was really pleased with the way he ran. I was really disappointed the way he ran at Aqueduct in the state. But I thought, even though it was just a four-horse field, you know, I liked the way it's set up. I liked the way Johnny rode him. Kind of keep him there in that pocket waiting for it to open up. And when it opened up, he was there and won easy. And he seemed to come out of it good. And I'm looking forward to running him on the 27th.
Well, I got one more older horse, and this is a start coming up later this week. Finding Fame. For Anthony Beck and Andrew Rosen.
And she's had a good winter. She had some ankles on her we had to take care of after she ran at Belmont, and you know, she's really had a good winter down here. She's developed quite a bit from what she was last spring, and you know, she's been working really well. And you know, I mean, it's a pretty competitive race for a 2-0 van down here this time of year, and so I think we'll find out a little something about her. But I think it's a good race for her to be in. You know, the 7-8 isn't going to exhaust her, and you know, hopefully her future's in front of her.
That, actually, I'm losing track. That's tomorrow, right? Yeah, that's tomorrow, that race.
That's tomorrow. Yeah, that's tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, Shug, very excited for Don and Donna Adam to have a horse like Greatest Honor and all the other good things that are going on. And great to get the first visit of the year in. And we're looking forward to Performer and everything else that's coming down the line.
Well, we are too. You know, I'm pleased with the way things are sort of sorting out over the winter. You know, we've been able to get rid of, well, that's not a good word. We've ever been able to sort of put away some of the horses that, you know, that maybe weren't going to be of New York caliber. And
sure.
And hopefully when we go back up there with our 2-year-olds and, you know, we'll have the kind of stable that we're looking for.
Yeah, it always seems to be that kind of stable for Shug McGahey and the team. And everything good, Allison, keeping busy? How's her winter?
Her winter's been fine. It's cold out here this morning. The wind's blowing. She's been playing golf since 9 o'clock this morning. So when I saw her, I had to run home a little while ago, and she was leaving. She was grinning. She said, looking forward to it, and she's been doing that a lot. But so she's had a good winter, and like I say, it's a little bit chilly down here today with the wind blowing, but that'll only last a day, and I'm not going to complain because I watched the weather in New York last night.
Yeah.
That wasn't good. Are you up there?
Yeah, I'm home. Although Saratoga area, we got next to nothing. We got about 4 or 5 inches at most.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's fine. But downstate, I mean, boy, we got that storm in December. That's the storm we got mid-December when we got 3 feet.
Well, I was watching, you know, the New York News last night at 6:30. I mean, they came on with the snowstorm. And I don't know whether it's still snowing or not, but they had a lot of snow.
Yeah, it's still cleaning up, and of course, no training and today, and it'll take a day or two to straighten things up. But no, stay warm, stay safe down there, Shug, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Okay, Steve. Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's always fun to catch up with Shug McGahey and so many horses of interest, and whether it's the stake horses or the soon-to-be stake horses. Got a nice update on a bunch here that people may have forgot about. Let's take a break, top of the hour. We're going to hear from Brian Lynch. Andy is going to visit tomorrow, so we'll hold off. John Parada on his way to the studio, and second half of the show, we're going to pay tribute to John Forbes and his life dedicated to the sport and to the people and to Monmouth Park. Back after this, hour two at the races, Groundhog Day. Back, give us a minute.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.